Okay, good morning to all our family and friends out there in the States or wherever you're listening to this. Today is February 25th, 2022, and actually here in Lviv, our day is drawing to a close. It's a little after 6 p.m. in the evening here. Sadly, Russia's invasion of Ukraine continues into its second day. And while we have opportunity, we'd like to share another update with you. Let me start by saying that for now, our family remains at our home in Lviv. We are safe. So far, there have been no violent events in the city. No bombs or missiles have fallen here. We have had a lot of different air raid sirens and some scary times, and I want to talk a little bit about that. But our family is safe. We're watching things. We're listening. Our eyes are open. Our utilities remain on, as we said before, the light, gas, electricity, and so forth. So let me just give you a little snapshot of what we saw today here in Lviv. So this morning, a little before 7 a.m., Kelsey and I were awakened by air raid sirens. We had a couple of those yesterday. I have never experienced being in a city where an air raid siren goes off and it's not a drill. And let me tell you, it is a discomforting feeling. It is a disheartening feeling. And I don't know, 10 minutes or so before 7 o'clock, we woke up and thought we heard the sirens, kind of jumped up, went to the window. And sure enough, there they were wailing in the early morning hours. Now, we know there are shelters nearby our house. We have a map of them, actually, of different ones that are available. But so far, we had actually never been to one. And if it might seem silly, it might seem a simple thing, but to just bolt out into the cold early in the morning with all your kids and try and run down into a parking garage just seems so strange and so difficult when the time comes. So as the sirens blared, we debated what to do. We started getting up and gathering our things. Our younger children were still asleep at this time. And as a few minutes passed, we realized that the sirens were still blaring, but the skies were calm. There was no other noise. We couldn't hear any explosions or bombs. And so we struggled what to do. Should we drag everybody out of bed and throw their clothes on and their coats and bolt out into the cold? We, as I said, hadn't actually been to one of these shelters before, even though we knew generally where they were supposed to be. But happily, by the time we were able to get things moving, the sirens had stopped. We later learned that they sounded because of an unidentified drone that was spotted in the area. So, with that scare behind us, we started into our morning. One of the first things that happened after that was that we learned that a Ukrainian family, some friends of ours who work on our team, had made the decision to head south to his hometown of Skola, which is located right at the beginning of the Carpathians. And that's a move that we've seen several Ukrainian families or locals, not even only Ukrainian families, sometimes others, foreigners and so forth. It's a move we've seen them do. Rather than evacuate the country completely, they'll relocate to a rural area, you know, out into the mountains or away from major cities. And as long as such a move keeps you away from the paths whereby the Russian soldiers are attacking some of those major, maybe some of the highways where tank columns are rolling or whatever, then it makes sense. You're going to probably be reasonably safe from missile attacks and bombs and so forth. So their family made that decision. They left in a hurry this morning and we're kind of watching their apartment for them. So one thing that we've kind of learned when crises come, and this kind of crisis is certainly a first for us, but we've had others of a smaller scale. And one thing that we've learned is that keeping our family on as good of a schedule as possible, as close to a routine as possible, really helps keep everyone calm. And one of our family's major traditions is a morning Bible time. Every morning that we can, we gather in the living room and we read a few Psalms from our Bible and we talk about them and we have a time of prayer. So this morning we got the kids together in the living room around 9 o'clock, and as it is the 25th today, we read Psalm 25, and we talked about that, and then we had I read them a couple of other verses that came to my mind that were verses of encouragement in this kind of time of fear and uncertainty, and I want to read them to you here. One was Isaiah 41:10, which says, "Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed. For I am thy God. I will strengthen thee, yea, I will help thee, yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness." And the second passage that I read to the kids this morning was one that we had sort of adopted as our family verse for our recent trip to America, which we knew would be stressful and hectic and a lot of upheaval. And that verse is Joshua 1:9, which also has some great application to the situation in which we currently find ourselves. So I'm going to read that verse to you now. Joshua 1:9 says, "Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. And we reminded the children and ourselves that that's why we're here, is because God commanded us. We didn't come here as tourists or for just a fun vacation. We're here serving the Lord in his army because he's commanded us, and we're to be strong and of a good courage and not be afraid because the Lord is with us. And that's the basis why we can go through scary times, difficult times, uncertain times, and not fear, is because God is with us. It's his presence above military might or confidence of other kind, confidence in our own strength or supplies, above any of that. It's the knowledge that God is with us. So after the Bible time, Kelsey and I sat down in my office to further discuss our plans going forward. And we are seriously considering evacuation. I want people to know that, in case you might think that that's just gone out of our heads. No, we know that Poland is near. Some of our friends have already left for Poland. There are pros and cons, of course, like with anything, but it's something that we're seriously considering. And unfortunately, it's not a simple decision. It's not like, oh, well, we'll just jump in the car and, you know, drive to Walmart. Jumping in the car right now and driving to Poland would take us hours, maybe more than 24 hours, even though it's a distance of only, you know, an hour and a half drive or whatever that comes to. To give you an example, we've been keeping touch with some missionaries that we know from Kiev. This was the guy that called me yesterday morning at 5 a.m. and said that he had heard the explosions. Their family left sometime during the day yesterday, left their home in Kiev because of the attacks and the bombing, and they drove through the night. Initially, their plan was to come here to Lviv, but for a few reasons, they decided to bypass Lviv and just go straight to the Polish border. They got there sometime this morning, having driven all night, been in terrible traffic jams. One time he said their van almost got stuck in a huge mud pit that they probably never would have gotten out of. But they made it to the Polish border, and I've been in touch with them a couple of times through the day. They are still in line. As of this recording, it is now 6:22 p.m. in Lviv, and they have been in that line since the early morning, I think. They were told that probably to wait through the whole thing would be 15 to 20 hours. When I wrote to this missionary earlier and talked to him on the phone, or I was texting with him, and I just said, hey, it was the middle of the day. Do you have any kind of an ETA? And he said, I really don't know. He said, probably at least another 10 hours in line. So if we were to go drive somewhere to cross into Poland or something, it would entail our family spending quite a lot of time on the road in the van with some kind of concerning and uncertain circumstances. So all that to say, though, we are trying to get ready. We're gathering our documents. We're packing essentials. We're trying to deal with some of the logistics of, you know, our apartment and things that we would be leaving behind if we had to leave. And so Kelsey and I have been talking about that, and we chatted more this morning as we were working on some of our other tasks. Well, then again, towards the lunchtime, I went out into the neighborhood to run some errands, and on my way home, the air raid sirens went off again. I was close to the building. I was probably, you know, maybe half a kilometer away from our apartment, and I heard the air sirens again. So now Kelsey's in the house with the kids. I'm outside. We hear these air sirens. I still can't see anything. It's a terrible feeling. You look up in the sky, and you see nothing. You can't see very far because of the tall buildings. You don't hear anything, at least in our case. But you hear these sirens, and you know they're not a drill. And we start getting warnings on our Telegram channels that we're watching that there's an aerial threat. Take shelter. Get to the underground shelters now. Move quickly. Whatever. So I called Kelsey and I said, Kels, I hear the sirens. Get the kids. Put their coats on. Meet me downstairs. I hadn't been there yet, but I knew that our building had some underground basements. In Ukrainian, they call them podvals, and they're these kind of these separate access, you have to access them from outside, sort of underground places, and people tend to store potatoes and other stuff in there. They kind of damp and dark. But we have one, one or two in our building. I just never been to it before. So Kelsey started getting the kids ready. She came downstairs. As I got close to the building, some of the kids were coming out of the building. Some of the older kids were already coming out. And I motioned them to follow me, and we started walking around the backside of our building where the entrance to the podvals, the basements, should be. I actually had to run upstairs to do something and drop off something and then come back down. And so by the time we started going around, Kelsey had come out and the kids were with me. And as we were rounding the corner, I met a group of people coming out from behind there going the other direction, the Ukrainians. And I decided to ask them, I said, hey, are you guys going to a shelter? And they said, yes, yes, we're leaving for the shelter. And I said, okay, well, maybe we'll just follow you. Then perhaps they already know of a good shelter to go to that's open. And I think I mentioned something about the Pivols, but those are maybe not the best option if you have a better one. So we, so Kelsey and me and all our six kids, we start following these people kind of crossing the parking area that's near our building. And we ended up in an underground parking garage that's underneath an office building. It was quite a large area, a good shelter. I mean, it was down low, very thick concrete, would have made a good bomb shelter. And it's so surreal. I mean, I'm sure we've all watched movies. Like, we watched a series called Foyle's War about World War II, and you see these people going into the shelters and hearing the explosions and so forth. And you never think that you'll have to do that yourself, but we did. And so, we got down into the parking garage. The entrance was maybe 100 yards from our house, something like that, not far. And it was crowded with people, not full, but there were quite a number of people down there, a few cars down there. There's plenty of space, but it was kind of dim and dirty. There's nowhere to sit. So we just found an area over in the corner by a wall where there was enough room, and we stood there. And as we waited, there was still no noise of explosions or attacks or anything, although the sirens continued. And the protocol is, I believe, that when the sirens sound, even if they stop, you're not supposed to come out of the shelters until you hear the all clear. And at one point, I think the sirens did stop, but we stayed in the shelter and other people did too, just kind of waiting to see what would happen. Meanwhile, I realized that Kelsey had brought her walkie, but I did not have mine. So we only had one walkie-talkie. And as a side note, our family uses walkie-talkies all the time because our apartment is two stories. And when I'm in the upper floor, say in my office, and Kelsey's downstairs with the kids, we can't hear each other talk. And so we use walkies in the house all the time to communicate. And of course, those are pretty handy in a case like this. And so I thought, well, it'd be nice if we had two of them in case we needed to split up. So since things are quiet, I'm going to run back to the apartment, run upstairs, grab a walkie, grab another water bottle, and get some camping mats. We have a lot of those left over from CMO. So I thought I'll get some camping mats so the kids will have a place to sit. So I ran back to the house, ran up the stairs, grabbed all that stuff as quickly as I can, tried to find a bag that I could stuff the mats into, watching Telegram, trying to see if there's been an all clear announcement. We're very grateful that the internet is still working here, and came back down to the shelter where Kelsey and the kids were, gave them the mats. We got all set up, and just as we kind of got things set up, someone said the all clear had sounded. So we thought, oh, great. Okay, kids, roll up the mat. We can leave the shelter now. I think we'd been down there 20 minutes, 25, something like that. So we started packing our things up and following the crowd of people out, and just as we all started to exit the parking garage, the siren sounded again. So we all sort of looked at each other and turned around and plodded back down the ramp into the parking garage to wait. Happily, we were only down there a few more minutes, and another all clear came and we were able to leave. I think I may have mentioned this already, but later we heard that there had been some drones in the area. And it turns out there was also a test siren thing that we weren't aware of at the time. But today, all that to say, was a day of sirens, and it was our first day as a family to spend some time standing in an underground shelter, wondering if we were going to get hit with, you know, a rocket attack. And to be clear here, I have my doubts that the Russians would specifically target central Lviv, where people live, with a rocket attack, mainly because I don't think it's in their military interest right now. Now, there is an airport on the south side of town that could well be a target. So far, it's not been hit. But that was a learning experience. And it's interesting, you leave the shelter, you come back up, you set down your things, you try to get back to normal life. And I've found that, like, all day, I keep hearing the sirens in my head. I keep kind of bolting upright and thinking, oh, was that the air raid sirens? And kind of going to the window to listen, and no, it's quiet outside. And you just kind of, you can hear the noise almost in your head. It's sort of like a false sound that you wonder. It has an incredible, very hard to describe psychological effect on you. You feel vulnerable. You feel like there's nothing you can do, especially when you see the pictures and the videos that are coming through the news of the bombs that are falling, say, in Kyiv or in other cities where there have been major explosions. And sadly, in some cases, people's homes being hit, residential apartment buildings and things like that being hit by missiles, just terrible. So having said all that, that's kind of a view of what we experienced today. And let me say, as gloomy as that sounds, We have so much to be grateful for. We sat in the shelter for 30 minutes. No bombs fell. There were no explosions. Mostly we were dealing with just the psychological pressure. Having said that, I will put in that that psychological pressure is exhausting. We get to the end of the day and we feel like we've been, you know, running up and down the stairs all day long or something. And to some degree we have, if we're going to shelters. But we're grateful to be safe. Before I close this, I want to mention a couple more things, just of note right now from what we know, in Lviv and beyond. Martial law was introduced yesterday, and, that is Ukraine wide, all across the country. They've introduced martial law. As of today, we now have a curfew in place. That was something that was not introduced initially, but in Lviv, at least, there's now a curfew from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. And one of the reasons for that, I think, is that they're trying to catch these diversionaries, the Russian operatives, perhaps, that are coming into towns to sabotage or sow confusion or cause problems. So nobody's allowed to be out of their house on the street after 10 p.m. and before 6 a.m. At the moment, when it comes to just the military conflict in general, it appears that the hottest fighting right now is around the capital, which is Kyiv, or Kyiv, as it's pronounced in Ukrainian. And there have been bombs falling. I actually was watching a live cam of the center of Kyiv, what they call the Maidan Square, and you could see a couple of buildings, like high-rise apartment buildings, that were burning right in the center of Kyiv. It's incredible. Having said that, I've been told from multiple sources that the Russians, despite possessing a far superior military force, are sustaining very heavy losses. And to that end, I want to read a quote from a letter that Yura Popchenko sent out. Yura is a Bible translator. He's a Ukrainian Bible translator. He's been a personal friend of mine since 1997. And they also serve here as missionaries in that capacity. And Yura released a kind of a prayer letter or an update just before I made this recording. I'm going to read to you a small paragraph about the military situation. Yura says, "The war is raging on at least 10 fronts simultaneously, but the hottest battle is in and around Kyiv. Ukrainian armed forces put up fierce resistance and destroyed 10 Russian fighters, 7 helicopters, several ballistic missiles, 80 tanks, 516 armored personnel carriers, and there have been over 2,800 casualties." I've confirmed that with other news sources. That's both killed, injured, and wounded people put out of action from the Russian forces. I'm reading on from Yura now. "Russia has never suffered so many casualties in an armed conflict in its history. However, our forces are greatly outnumbered, and we need your prayer for Ukrainian armed forces." So that's a quote from Yura Popchenko. If you're interested in getting more updates from him, you can subscribe to his blog at BibleUA.com. That's BibleUA.com. And you can subscribe to his email newsletter and definitely be in prayer for their family. His wife is Wendy. She's an American, and they have several children. And they live in Kyiv, but they are currently outside the city. They've relocated to a safer place while this is all going on. Another thing to note is that all Ukrainian men ages 18 through 60 are now prohibited from leaving the country. There's been a general call to mobilize amongst amongst eligible men in Ukraine. And so Ukrainian males ages 18 through 60 are now prohibited from leaving the country. And while on the one hand, yes, that's understandable, their country is in peril and they need to defend it. It also causes a lot of heartache for families because now the family wants to evacuate. Maybe they have friends across the border, but daddy can't go with them. Daddy has to stay behind. And that's actually something that Yura's family faces. Because of that, they've made the decision, and other families have made the same decision, to stay back altogether, which puts them, of course, at greater risk. But so many men and women, too, across the country, across Ukraine, are putting their lives in harm's way to defend against this terrible attack that's come to their homeland. So to wrap up, just a few more words about our plans. As I stated before, we are preparing to leave if we must. We're going to be packing bags. We've got documents ready. Hopefully by tonight, we'll have everything packed up so that if something happens, we can jump in the van and go. Still, though, that's not a decision that we've made yet. There's still a lot of factors, things that we're looking at. We're in contact with many different people across Ukraine. Some of them are debating whether to leave or not. Some of them are on their way here, and we've been trying to coordinate with them. We, as I said earlier, we have identified some possible crossings into Poland, and we're considering which one of those to try in the event of an evac. As you know, we have small children, and so, of course, we are concerned for their well-being. And right now, things are quiet in Lviv, and there's been no evidence of violence or unrest here. We know that in the days to come, though, that there may be danger, but also opportunities for ministry. And we expect those opportunities to be manifold. And if we can reasonably balance the safety of our family with the ministry opportunities that are here, that's something that we desire to do. It's possible we may travel to Poland for a time and then return if things get quiet. We're not sure. But regardless, we remain committed to the work that God has called us to. And we'd like to ask you to continue to pray that he would protect us and that he would give us wisdom for the many decisions that we face. And of course, pray for Ukraine. Pray for the young men and women on the front lines who are placing their lives in harm's way for the defense of their homeland. And pray that God would utterly confound Putin's plans and that his armies would be soundly defeated. So thank you so much for listening to this. Thank you for your prayers and support. And may God bless Ukraine.